Debbie that I didn't know. Debbie is an interfaith minister, and in addition to that, she has her own business. Let me see if I can get this right now. Tell me again what it was.
I do energy medicine using Bach flower remedies and emotional freedom technique.
And Debbie will be, her speech today will be on your impersonal self. So please help me welcome Debbie Hazelton.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's see. Do I need this as well? I don't need that. Okay. So Glenda told me, I'm going to cover these up. I hope I don't need your notes.
No,
nobody looked at mine. So Glenda told me that I am hooked up and the light and my light is on. Yeah. I mean, that is a great affirmation. Because let me tell you how my day started. First, before I do that, I want to thank you for the privilege of being here. And I'm so thrilled you guys got up an hour early to be here. And I also want to thank you for the support that you showed to Dez and the Clark family, Tony and all of us. I live with Dez and Tony. And in this time of our grieving from the loss of Tommy Clark, it is a privilege to be with someone in their life and in their death. And it was a month yesterday, so thank you so much for your love and outpouring of support. So let me tell you how this day started for me, just to get us all on the same page of the wonderfulness of the human that we have in common before we get to the divine, because who made us, who gave us sense of humor? The divine gave us sense of humor, right? So I was putting on my makeup this morning, and I got out a bottle, and I thought, that top doesn't look right, but the bottle feels right. And I have apps I could check to see what's what, and they'd tell me. But nope, I sprayed my face with hair gel. I guess I wanted to make sure my makeup would stick, you know, stay in place. So then on the way here, I had gotten this case out of the closet to put my stuff that I was carrying in, and I thought, gosh, it's got a funny hole in it. But it's got all this Velcro, and I noticed my stuff was starting to fall out of the other end of it, and I'm on the way here, and Dez goes, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm trying to make sure this Velcro can get tighter. And she says, why did you put your stuff in the cat carrier? So if you see cat hair and dog hair on me, in my world, cat and dog hair are sacred. Absolutely.
Amen.
So yeah, amen. So we're talking about the impersonal self. Now, I remember when considering God, when I first came into New Thought back in the 60s and the 70s, Science of Mind and Unity, back way back in the dark ages. I should have said I was in my crib, but not really. But I remember hearing about God as personal and impersonal and thinking, but I want it to be personal. And I was talking to someone else earlier here this morning. What about all of that that we have in our old ideas? I remember telling someone I wanted to be a minister, and he said, well, that's great. You can go anywhere as long as you abide by three laws. I only got as far as the first one, and he gave up on me. He said, you have to believe that we are separate from God. I said, but I don't. So in New Thought, we don't practice that kind of separateness. So we talk about the self and that God principle as a oneness that we all have in common with it and with each other. So this impersonal self, you know, you talked last week about the personal self, and all those mistakes I made this morning were about my personal self. But the impersonal self, what is that? The higher self? The potential, the self beyond the personality, the self beyond the ego, the self beyond the day-to-day. Freud said that the conscious mind is the tip of the iceberg. So as we can move beyond that ice, that little tip of that iceberg into that beyond, we have a huge wealth of spiritual principles, spiritual law on which to build and move into our lives and into the future. So two similar affirmations. One that I have gotten to appreciate more lately is, I am a spiritual being learning to have a human experience. So what does that, that's interesting. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that, because what we want to do is to bridge the personal with the impersonal self. I am a spiritual being learning to have a human experience. Wow, is that a lot of learning too? And then, I'm a spiritual being living in a spiritual universe governed by spiritual law. Well, let me tell you, I hold on to that when I hear the news. I hold on to that when people get off on going on and on about what's happening in the world, and that they're so sure that they know who is doing what and what's happening, and or the we're going to in a handbasket. You know, I hold on to this world I am in is governed by spiritual law, no matter how it seems, no matter how it may appear. I remember this in those times. Now, if we want to reach more beyond the day-to-day, then we need to think about, what are we holding in our hands, in our hearts, in our minds? I think of that game, Pass the Shoe. You know, you pass this stuff. You pass the shoe. You pass whatever it is that you're talking about. And what do you want to be holding when the music stops? Well, I don't want to be holding on to a lot of negativity. I don't want to be holding on to resentment. And the farther I move along, I know I don't want to be holding on to something that isn't mine. So what are we holding on to? And are we holding on to so much that we can't open our hands, our hearts, or our minds to receive? So you may think, oh, I can handle all that I'm holding on to, but can you allow yourself to receive more if you think you've got it all in balance? Are you able to let go of what you're holding on to in principles, in assumptions, in attitudes, in daily activities, in thoughts and about yourself and about others? Can you let go enough to hold, to invite more in? I remember a funny example, a funny story, and your science of mind reading for today just really illustrated so much of what I'm thinking about for today. When I was in fifth grade, we had a homeroom teacher for all of the kids who were blind, and then we went out to regular classes. They called them sighted classes, and then there was the blind room. Yeah, that makes, yeah, you had that too, huh? So I came back from my class one day, and the teacher in the resource room, the homeroom, he was on the warpath. Everybody was in big trouble. People had gotten Fs on different things, and people were getting punished right and left. And he said to me, Debbie, you sit in that chair at your desk, and you match what's in column A with what's in column B. And so I had this little book in front of me, and I'm looking. I see column A, the first word. I don't remember what they were, but I matched that with column B right away. I was like, oh, this is simple. And he said, and by the way, you will not be out of that chair until this is done. And I thought, boy, I remember those times at the dinner table. If I didn't eat, I couldn't get up, you know? So I got the first one. I got to the second one. I'm like, I'm going up and down that list for column B, and I'm not finding it. And I'm starting to sweat bullets, and I'm starting to imagine that teacher is going to be so mad at me, and I'm going to get a horrible punishment, and I'm going to be sitting there all night. And you know, we can look at our lives, our daily lives, of what we get into in a pickle. Of, oh gosh, there's a little thing with a check that went awry, or a conversation that didn't go right, or a traffic something that isn't going right, and we think, oh, I'm in trouble now. So I sat there, and I really was struggling. Any guess at what I did to get out of it? Besides, I didn't know to pray, really, at that time. But what could I have done? How, go on to the next one. Yeah, that's a good idea. That is a good idea. What I did was I turned the page. Wow, turned the page, and I don't, you know, I didn't, it seems obvious when I think of it now. I turned the page, and wow, there it was. The list was continued. It didn't dawn on me at first that column B continued on the next page, but it did. And how many times in our lives does the possibility, does the opportunity look better if we turn the page, if we get out of the box of thinking that it's only one way and it has to be here and 2 and 2 must equal 4 and there's no other way? Well, what if there is another way if we just turn the page? Now, I believe that disability in the world presents all of us with a riddle. You know, I think we sort of feel in society like disability means there's something wrong. But I think that it's kind of meant to be. It presents us with a riddle. How can I live and thrive beyond the 5 senses? And how can possibility thinking turn into positive abilities? And what is realization? The realization is not only a mind thing, it may start in the mind, but to realize means to make real. Jesus said, you can do what I do and then some. And how many other ascended masters have said equally something similar? I know many of you in here, some of you are Buddhists and other kinds of faiths. So how can we take and move beyond what we see and know that there's more? I've been thinking a lot lately about the unseen and how much happens in our lives beyond what we typically know. And if we live in the unseen, why is it that so many people are afraid of losing their sight? That is one of the top fears that human beings have, of losing their sight. Helen Keller said if she had a choice, she would rather, if she could have one back, she would rather have her hearing than if, you know, that it's easier to be without her sight than her hearing. I wrote to somebody once who was in a wheelchair, and I thanked him for his book. It was a wonderful book, and I explained a little bit about my life, and he wrote me back. He said, "Oh, you poor dear, you're in far worse shape than I am." And, you know, we can always look at other people's lives and compare, but what can we learn and what can we take with? So if we're living in the unseen and much of the impersonal self and much of God the Spirit is in the unseen and the activity of Spirit is in the unseen, I want to say, come on in, the water's fine. It's really okay to be in the unseen. I feel like I got a front row seat. And so we can benefit from that. So it isn't only about not seeing, but we talk about hearing the still small voice. Do you think that people who are deaf hear the still small voice? Do you think Helen Keller heard the still small voice? I do. Sure, she heard it inside. It is. And what about somebody who's having a moving experience? Does somebody who's in a wheelchair, does somebody who's paralyzed have a moving experience? I think so. Where do they have it? Inside. For me, vision is in the mind. People say on the phone, "Oh yeah, I see what you mean. I see your point." Where do they see it? They see it in their mind's eye, in their understanding. Isn't it interesting? We have so many people with foot problems. What are the feet dealing with? Understanding. What are we standing on? And where is our understanding? So moving beyond the day-to-day stuff of awareness. Now, meditation, we hear so much about. If you look at the work of Eckhart Tolle, he believes in meditation for sure, but he also says what's important is how you connect. If you sit there and you try and try and try, that may not do it for you. But if you have moments where you connect, and I'm going to give you a few of my favorite, that is what's most important. I think meditation is like balancing the book on your head. You can get it there, but what happens when you go to move in the world? What happens when you go in the world? Can you keep that book where you had it? Can you remember the muscle memory of how it felt to carry that book? Can you remember the inner muscle memory of how it felt to connect with that higher self or that sense of the divine. So I think if we carry this into the world and we consider, how do we move with the differences of other people beyond disability? How do we connect with and really appreciate people? I have really been knowing the importance of and making more of an effort to practice stopping everything and hearing what someone's saying. I was thinking about an old friend last week who I had often just really been frustrated with her trying to change me and change everyone else. I finally said to myself, it's like back to that, what other people think of me is none of my business. What if I don't try to change her, I don't worry about her trying to change me, and I still find ways to enjoy all that we have in common? Now, we talk about mistakes. What does the photographer do before the photographer gets the great picture? What do they do? They get. They get mistakes. Mistakes. So what if our things that we think are mistakes are really just mistakes before we get to the great moments, the great pictures, the great accomplishments? And what if the mistakes we make or the mistakes we make give us empathy for those of other people? I hear a lot of sort of referee kind of stuff going on. Is so-and-so guilty? And did they do this? And should they be punished? And I think that mistakes are pay dirt, treasure. They're a treasure trove of ways that we can have empathy for the struggle that we all have in common just in living as human, just as striving to be a better human being and to realize, make real, that human spark with the divine. So I really like to contemplate that empathy, and I like to think about wonderment, and that's how I get my little one word, one moment here and there that connect me with the divine throughout the day. And wonderment, okay, one of them is vanilla. I love vanilla. If you ever see me getting a sweet somewhere, I would just as soon get vanilla more than chocolate. Vanilla is a spiritual experience for me. And the reason is that vanilla is in so many things, so many particularly baked things, but not only. I think it's in some gourmet dishes. It may be in like coq au vin and some other things, vanilla. Don't hold me to that. I don't know for sure, but it's in a lot of things. And it's a silent partner. It's there, and if it's not there, we notice, something's missing. We may not know it's there. We may not taste it. I think that's how God is. It's there. It's the silent partner. So I am inspired by vanilla. I'm also inspired by the smell of rain. I love that smell. I have yet to find anyone who could bottle it to the point where I would say, oh yeah, that does it. I have to go outside when it's raining and breathe that in. Who put the wag in the dog's tail? I get really inspired by that. That wag, who put that there? That's amazing. And who put cuteness in the world? And what is cuteness? Cuteness, we see it everywhere in all kinds of people. We see it in children. We see it in animals. And if we're really, you know, able to appreciate it in ourselves even, cuteness. It's cute that I put hair gel on my face today. And the factory of activity that is, we have 50 trillion cells in our body. The factory of activity going on in every one of those cells. I talked about that last time I was here. And the cells that are in part of how we have been designed and what keeps our body working. My personal self would not want to organize and keep track of all the activity that's involved in blood flow, digestion, and the massive communication network of transmitting messages to and from the brain and spinal cord. Can you imagine having to figure all that out and design all that and be on top of that? That would be insane. So the impersonal self goes on in the background taking care of so much automatically. And I like to even use that as wonderment to remind myself to get out of the way and let that impersonal self that grand sense of the expansiveness of all that is, keep working and doing what it does better than I sometimes do, often do. I play Dice World a lot. Some of you know Dice World is an app, and it's a group of six games, and I'm sitting there meditating as I'm playing, because sometimes I will think things like, oh, that's a lousy roll. I wonder if I should push the envelope and see if I can get beyond that lousy roll. Well, sometimes I'll feel the nudge to go ahead, and sometimes I'll say, no, don't, and I'll bank it, and I'll find that I'm ahead of the other person anyway, so why was I worrying? Why was I fretting, thinking I should push? That's that old ego. And maybe someone else needed to win. Sometimes it isn't about winning. It's about just enjoying the game, just playing the game. So I want to talk for a minute about words. Dr. Coleman, who many of you study with, Des does, and some of us have been there, and he's spoken here before, Dr. Will Coleman. He says, thoughts are things and words are beings. So I think of words like little, they're sort of like little people, and they have little feet on them, and they run out there to bring back what we declare, what we say. So if we are doing things, saying things that we don't want, and those words go out with those little feet running, they're going to bring back to us what we're saying. And so I think about some suggestions about words. Stay out of the wine barrel. You can go into the wine barrel, I suppose, if you want to slosh around. But the wine barrel, you know, Jill Bolt Taylor, in her book, My Stroke of Insight, said that she allows herself to indulge in the negative feelings, you know, maybe 5, maybe 15 minutes a day, maybe even a half an hour. But then the adult takes charge. And she says, okay, enough of that. Enough of those little children going on and on. You allow your kid to have a tantrum. You say, okay, you can have it in this room only, or you can have it for 10 minutes. And now get over it. Get on with it. It doesn't mean deny that those feelings are there, but don't let them rule you. So get out of the wine barrel. Carolyn Mace, in her book, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can, she talks about people who go on about woundology. You meet them, and in the first 5 minutes, it's like they're wearing a sweatshirt that tells you how they were abused. You learn that in their, that's how they identify themselves, by their woundology. No, guess what? You do that, and it keeps replaying, like the sloshing around in the wine barrel. And watch out for the organ recital. Don't go on when you meet people about all the things that are wrong with you and all your food allergies and all your this and that, your isms and your everything else. And you might later on, there's a place for that. You go into their house for dinner. Okay, I don't eat some things. All right. So there's a time and a place. Now, denial isn't just the river in Egypt. Denial and denial isn't just about denying things, and we don't just say, oh, okay, I can't say that, so I mean, I'm happy, happy, happy. What do you do around somebody? I knew somebody, I'd say, how are you? And she'd always say, I'm perfect, I'm perfect. It really got old, you know? And you could never get a real honest answer unless you really got her on the phone. Eventually, you might hear a little bit more. But denial, in my way of thinking, means to deny it power. You don't deny that it's a reality, but deny it power. All right, to ask or not to ask, lots of things. To ask God. Some people in New Thought are afraid that asking is like begging. Gary Douglas, who came out with a system called Access Consciousness, there are two questions in Access Consciousness that I love. To ask at any moment, no matter what I'm dealing with or thinking or considering, one is, what else is possible? What else is possible? Instead of just thinking I have to take what's there, what else is possible? And then my favorite is, how does it get any better than this? How does it get any better? He said that there was someone who had a lot of money and stopped making as much money because he thinks because she stopped asking that question. It could be going great, and how does it get even better than this, or any better than this? Or it could be going terribly on a bad day. How does it get any better than this? Not Not, oh gosh, what else is going to go wrong? But how does it get any better than this? It makes room. The asking makes room. I'm going to talk, let's see, about affirmations in a minute and as I wind up here, but I think a lot of people think they have to be totally willing and they won't take a plunge into something like a deeper level of spirituality or a deeper level of honesty or something because they think they have to be totally willing. The recovery programs talk about being willing to go to any lengths. And I want to add to that. I think it's important to be slightly willing. Because if you're slightly willing, then you can't get out of it if you think you're not totally willing. But if you're slightly willing, I think there are many wonderful, whatever you want to think of them as, angels, guides, spirits, whoever, whatever. But I think they hear that whisper of slight willingness and they go forward. She's willing. She's slightly willing. Come on, let's go. Let's help her get these other things into good manifestation. Let's work with her and make her one of our ambassadors to help bring about greater fruition for everyone. And I like to end prayers with this or something better. Now, people often think that the problem that many have is expectations. And they are quick to say, don't have expectations. The problem is getting those expectations in the way. I disagree. I think that many times people don't expect high enough. They think that the fear of failure is the big thing, but I think the fear of success is even bigger. And I think we should expect a lot from the fullness of life. And I think many times people are disappointed because their expectations weren't high enough. They were settling for less. But what if we learn to expect much and demand nothing? Now that's the real kicker, demand nothing, because the demands can get us into big trouble. To expect a lot, and know that that lot may come from many sources, many different places. And so if we can expect a lot and demand nothing. So I think that we work hand in hand, the impersonal self with the personal self. It's hand in hand, working together as one, and knowing when we need to. It's like we breathe in and we breathe out, and we know when to do our part of breathing in and breathing out and breathing out. And I think spirit knows when to do its part. And so I want, before we read that final affirmation, I want to talk a little bit about affirmations. Affirmations, I think, are something that if we really want to get the most out of them, we need to give them language that really puts us in motion and gives us that feeling, just like Des brings in her music. We get that, yes, okay, get that yes feeling inside. So Michael Beckwith in Daily Word for this month wrote about renewal and living in the spirit of renewal. Now he's talking about all of us in community, but we also really need to be in community with ourselves, and as we are in community with ourselves, we're in community with each other. So he says here, our affirmative response. Oh, wait a minute, before I get to that particular quote. We have now arrived at the outer blossoming of renewal, which is about putting into action our insights and how we are meant to deliver our gifts, talents, and skills as a beneficial presence on the planet. So I love that. We have now arrived at the outer blossoming of renewal. I love that image. Outer blossoming. Okay. And then he says, our affirmative response to spirit's clarion call. I looked up clarion, and it has to do with like an outward, a strong call. Our affirmative response to spirit's clarion call to recognize and honor our interconnectivity as one world family or as one self. That's my editorial little comment, is a vital aspect of spiritual renewal. It is an acknowledgement that we have shaken off our winter sleep, shaken off our winter sleep, and have now awakened to the verdant, luscious, fertile, beautiful inner landscape within all beings. We go forward united as one global heart, together beaming a cosmic smile across the universe. A cosmic smile. Wow. Okay, so now let me get, we have this affirmation on PowerPoint, and I'm going to read it once because I'm going to read it with some emphasis that I want us to think about. And, okay, anytime you're ready, you silly thing. Come on. Okay. I am a perfect point in the universe. Just think of even that. I am a perfect point in the universe. I am infused with all that I need and want to create a life of power, purpose, and contribution. I am a creative center. I intentionally and generously share my good with all I meet. Okay, let's see. Is that where it stops or does it keep going?
That's it.
Okay. All right, so let's say this together. Here we go. Okay, you ready? I am a point in the universe. I am infused with all that I need and want to create a life of power, purpose, and contribution. I am a creative center. I intentionally and generously share my good with all I meet. Amen. And so it is. Thank you so much for being here. So Glenda allows me to do a closing prayer. So let's do this together. Oh, let's go into this wonderful container that we have here, this wonderful container of community, of like-mindedness, where we know that we are all more than ourselves. We are more than ourselves individually and more than ourselves altogether. We know that wherever two or more are gathered in the midst of us, that so much great is happening. And so we choose to take the wisdom of today in whatever is meant for us, to take it forward, to remember what we need to remember at any given time, and to magnify it with the truth that is within us, to go forward and do the best that we can, to bring the best of who we are, to demonstrate the wonderful spirit that we are, that moves in us, through us, and as us. And we remember to bring our gratitude with us, knowing that gratitude is often what helps to move our greatness and move the greatness of spirit to magnify all that is. And so it is.